Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. Chris, how is your morning going, my friend?
I'm good. Just chilling at my aunt's in Michigan for a few days. I'm actually going to my other aunt's in Los Angeles later this week, just trying to catch up with family I've not seen since before the pandemic. So trying to do that, trying to be a loving family member without letting League Pass infiltrate all my family time. So yeah, doing that. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Are the Lakers or the Clippers in town when you're in Los Angeles? Will you be attending a game, or are you just avoiding the NBA as much as possible?
Honestly, I haven't even looked. My aunt is dealing with some health stuff, so you know, from that standpoint, I'm being not a good family member. I guess it's just what any family member should do. I'm kind of more focused on her. While I'm out there, I might try to watch some stuff on TV, but made it a point to not even look so that I'm not tempted to try to catch a game, because there will always be games. But, you know, family's family, and it's been a couple of years since I've seen people. So I'm going to just stick to the script and hang with family while I'm there.
That's good. And going out to L.A. in the winter is also an intelligent move by you, and I am jealous of it very much. It's very cold in New York. I don't like the cold, Chris. Is it cold in Chicago / Michigan? I assume so.
Cold in Chicago. I got here to Michigan. There's snow on the ground. I'm not too far outside of Detroit. And it's like, yeah, it was funny because I was thinking about, I knew last week I was going to come visit family. And I was like, should I go to LA first and then come to Michigan? But then my aunt is older, the one here in Michigan. So I was like, you know, if you do get sick, or if you do get the virus, somehow me, if I get the virus, I'm like, where would I rather be? So I'm like, let me go to Michigan first, see my older aunt first, then go to LA. And then I was also thinking like, oh, it'll be a really nice reprieve to get out of the cold weather for a few days after I've spent time it's even colder here in Michigan than it is in Chicago. So to get to LA for 3-4 days and just kind of relax there and see family there in the nicer weather, where it's not hot there, but it's 60 sounds a lot better than 15.
Yes, it does.
Snow on the ground, and there's deer out here, and it's suburban life, and it'll be nice to get back to city life where it's warm.
So you mentioned getting COVID, and on today's show, not that you have COVID, you mentioned the possibility of COVID right there. Chris, you do not have COVID, I'm pretty sure.
Not that I'm aware of.
Good. So on today's show, you know, We're going to talk about the pandemic's seemingly never-ending impact on the NBA. We're going to talk about how the Pacers are finally preparing to do something they should have done a long time ago. And then we'll bounce around the league by answering a few terrific emails. Speaking of, keep those questions coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Okay, so to be frank, I don't want to spend too much time talking about this because it isn't a particularly enjoyable topic, but at the same time, it's just so hard to ignore right now as someone covering the league, and I'm sure everyone listening following the league as well. There's these daily tweets that just pop up on my phone from Woj and Shams letting us know that a player or a coach will miss multiple games due to health and safety protocols or testing positive for COVID-19. Right now, half the Bulls seemingly have COVID. Half the Hornets have COVID or are in health and safety protocols. Ja Morant tested positive for COVID, and Dylan Brooks is in health and safety protocols. The Pacers and the Raptors canceled a recent practice out of, quote, an abundance of caution, despite nobody on Toronto's roster being in health and safety protocols. We had LeBron have a false positive that forced him to miss a game. Joel Embiid said that he wasn't sure if he was going to survive his bout with COVID. And, you know, I think that that helps keep things in perspective a little bit. Cases are dramatically up throughout the country, as are deaths. And the Omicron variant, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I don't know if there is a way to pronounce that word, but Omicron is how I'm going to pronounce it on today's show. The Omicron variant is more contagious than the Delta variant was. So with that context, does it feel like COVID is derailing this season or could potentially disrupt the schedule in a more dramatic way than we've seen so far? And just what do you make of us now still being where it feels we were a year ago when, you know, fans weren't allowed in arenas and games were being postponed left and right?
No, to me, and I mean, I thought about this because I'm like, does this make me an asshole for thinking that it's not derailing the season? I just think it's kind of where we're at societally right now, that it's derailing everything or it's threatening to derail everything, but it's kind of happening in the background. The games are still going on. You know, I think there's a debate to be had about whether they should, but I think really the virus has not gone away. And the fact that we have variants now, even when we kind of kill off one of them or one of them is mostly gone and not really wreaking havoc, then there's another one that pops up. You know, I think it is good and worth noting that most of the players are vaccinated. So it generally does not strike you as a life death thing for the players. You know, because I think, 97%? It's good that they still are testing as aggressively as they are. And it, to some extent, as much as it can be, I think it's good that we're hearing about the players testing positive. I don't want people, like in Joel Embiid's case, where he's saying that, he thought he wasn't going to make it for a minute. Like, that's very serious. To some extent, I think it's good that that messaging is out there so that at least some people hear and see that this is still a thing. So I don't know. I don't think it's derailing the season. I think every year we have stuff. Last year, we certainly had stuff like this where it was literally kind of taking a toll on teams and, you know, teams that otherwise probably make the playoffs comfortably, if not for people just being really taken out by this. You know, we've certainly talked about the Celtics and the Raptors and other teams like that where it literally derailed their seasons.
The Wizards.
To some extent. The Wizards, oh, certainly at the top of that list as well. So it doesn't feel like that yet to me, but also, you know, it doesn't seem to be knocking guys out for as long. Some guys are coming back a little bit sooner than you'd expect, but it's still around. And so it's not derailing it, but it definitely is a factor.
Yeah, I mean, the vaccination rate is very high in the NBA, but as we've seen, you know, I believe the CDC is now recommending or has recommended a while ago that booster shots are critical right now in warding off the Omicron variant. And I think a lot of players got the J&J, and that's just hasn't been as successful in protecting people from these variants of COVID And so I don't know what the rate is of players who have the booster. I would assume it's not as high as just the baseline vaccination rate. Probably should have double checked that to see if we have that data before we started recording, Chris. But no games have been postponed yet, but like I said in the intro there, practices are starting to be canceled. And I don't know, like, would it surprise you if a game was actually postponed? Because it's like fans are in arenas. I know that sometimes they're masked, sometimes they're not masked. And and this thing is just still raging throughout the country. Would it surprise you if for a stretch, you know, a team like the Hornets, who they have not had basically like any of their, I mean, they beat the Hawks without LaMelo, without Terry Rozier, without a whole bunch of their key players, Mason Plumlee, not available to play. But would it surprise you if we had this stretch where a team just wasn't able to compete and we had to make up games at some point down the line?
Not entirely. And I think the reason for me feeling that way actually gets back to what you were saying a minute ago. These stadiums are full. That's the big difference from last year to now, is that, you know, it took a while before teams made that decision. We basically were at the postseason before teams were starting to make that decision and then being comfortable enough to fill the stadiums, or that they started to realize, oh, if we make a vaccination requirement, we can feel better about having the stadium full and not have as many concerns. And so the fact that, again, most people in this country are vaccinated, I would imagine that in a lot of these markets that most of these people are vaccinated, not all of them, I would imagine that places like maybe Oklahoma City would be kind of interesting to look at relative to something like a New York City. But just in light of all that, watching these teams struggle to try to put a full team on the floor, but then also having a full stadium kind of runs counter to, you know, one versus the other, I would seem it's like a juxtaposition. So at some point, I would imagine, if you postpone the games, maybe it buys you more time to wear. I mean, the worst case scenario for a lot of these teams financially is to have the games but not play in front of fans. And I imagine the NBA really, really does not want to go back to that if they can avoid it. And so even if they have to postpone the games, I imagine they would prefer to do that so that you can have as close to a full crowd as possible and get that money from that standpoint. But it does, again, if we're asking the hard questions here, the question may be like, should the crowds be as full as they are or full at all if this thing is going to rage on? And you know, one thing you did not mention that I think we should, just so that it's out there, everything that the CDC is saying so far is that the Omicron variant is not thought to be as severe as the other ones are. It does seem more contagious but less severe. So that is one thing to keep in mind. But still, I mean, the virus is the virus. The virus is still scary. So I imagine that the league wants to maximize money without jeopardizing people and putting people in jeopardy. And if that's the case, it really doesn't make sense that the stadiums are full as teams are rolling out 7-8 guys because they've got 5 or 6 that are in protocol. So it wouldn't surprise me if there are games postponed, but is it derailing the season, to your original question? I don't think it is relative to last year. No.
It's such a weird, I always feel kind of icky talking about this in the context of like how this is impacting the NBA and the NBA's
right.
schedule.
Right.
So, you know, I asked this question with that subtext there. Like, how much of a bummer is it just as a fan of the league when, you know, you're sitting down to tune in for like a Bulls game and it's just like DeMar DeRozan isn't there, and this was such a like an exciting time for fans of that team. You're from Chicago, or you live in Chicago. Like, I don't know. It's just such a, I can't like put my finger on it beyond just saying this stinks, and like, why are we still here? And I'm just like voicing my frustration in the wind right now. So I apologize. I don't really have a question for you beyond like,
no, I'll say this. I mean, it from the most baseline standpoint, to kind of get back on the basketball side of it, it kind of makes what Phoenix was doing even more incredible from the standpoint of winning that many games in a row. Because the way I think about it, and, you know, watching the Bulls and everybody else, is you're going to have games that you just look horrible because of this. You're going to have guys that are really integral to what you do that are just going to be out of the lineup on a random night. And I mean, we've had some of that over the past few years where a coach will just decide to not play his best players and let them rest. And so you're going to essentially take a loss that way. This is just more serious and more rooted in health. I mean, it's health, but it's not, you know, it's public health as opposed to load management. And, you know, it's a much bigger deal because it's contagious. So, you know, I think that's the takeaway from it is just it does disrupt stuff. I don't think it's derailed it. You know, we're fortunate, I guess, on some level it didn't derail the situation when they went to the bubble. But that causes its own kind of complications from a personal level, not ones that fans feel as much, but for the players and having to be away from their families, it's a trade-off. And, you know, and there are a lot of people that have asked the question, I think rightly so, does a society that can't really keep this under wraps or do its best in a situation like this, does it really deserve to kind of have the dessert that is sports? If it doesn't finish its dinner and really handle the things it needs to handle. Now, the rest of the world is still dealing with this too, but you would hope that America would be better positioned to take care of it and to have better testing in place for it, which now it seems like it's kind of in a better place. But the idea of having free testing or, you know, testing that people could just do at home the same way that there is in the UK and other places, you know, there are things that the country could be doing better. A lot of things, I think, but we'll see. It is frustrating, you know, but I think that it's great that we have a league to watch, you know. Although, like I said, I think some people would make the argument that maybe we should get this figured out first and then worry about basketball and everything else. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. But hopefully it does not explode out of control the way that we saw a year and a half, 18, 19 months ago.
Yeah, I want to – this is my last question, then I want to move on to actually talk about basketball. But the All-Star Weekend is still a couple months away. And usually that's a time when players go on vacations and leave the country and then come back. And it just seems like that would be a particularly dire thing to do potentially, in terms of just getting yourself exposed to contracting a variant of COVID-19. Do you think the NBA should even have All-Star Weekend? And I haven't even mentioned like bringing people, all these people together, flying them into, I think it's in Indianapolis this year, I think.
Indianapolis has a bunch of games this year between that and the football title game.
Is it Cleveland or is it Indianapolis? Actually,
you're right. I'm almost positive it's Cleveland. Good call. Okay. I'm almost positive.
Yes, Cleveland. Either way, we're flying to Cleveland, bringing everybody in there. Like, is that such a smart thing? Such a smart decision right now? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. And last year, it was really controversial that they decided to do it. But at least when they did it, it was Atlanta and it was kind of bubbled off. I don't think Cleveland is talking about doing that. If they are, I'm sure they're not excited about doing that. So I think you have to kind of wait and see with it. I was kind of the opinion that it did not make sense to do last year and was critical of that. I thought it was kind of jarring too that it was in Atlanta. A lot of us were friends with Sekou Smith, who passed away and worked out of Atlanta. And so it was just kind of like, you know, who had just passed away from the virus and, you know, was one of the most well-loved, you know, well-liked reporters in the league. And so it just felt kind of empty to do that. You know, I get that the league, let's just be honest, let's keep it a buck. The league never wants to throw away opportunities to generate money. They were willing to kind of play the season a month and a half, 2 months after it ended, you know, in October of 2020 to start another season. Even though people as vocal and as big as LeBron were saying, no, we don't want to do this. And the league was kind of cautious about it at first. And then they kind of went in for the kill and said, look, we're going to lose a quarter of our money this year if we don't do it. Do you guys really want to do that? And they started kind of playing hardball through that sort of messaging to the players. And all of a sudden, what do you know? The season was going to start really early, really fast, because they could not lose that Christmas date. The same thing ended up being true of the All-Star game, even though everybody was kind of saying, are you sure you want to do this? And then lo and behold, was it Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons that couldn't play in the game because of the barber or whatever? There were guys that missed the All-Star game because they had the virus. So, I mean, stuff is going to happen. It's going to continue to happen when you kind of do that. But we know what the league's priority is. I don't think they want to do it so much to where they're jeopardizing everything. But if they take a risk here or there, I think they've shown they're willing to do that. And, you know, for better or worse, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I understand the thinking. I probably would not at this rate if stuff continues to explode. But as we know with this virus, a lot of stuff can change in a month, 2 months. And hopefully it does and goes back in the other direction.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say about COVID-19 or the pandemic, or can we move on to talk about our mutual least favorite? I think this might be our mutual least favorite team, the Indiana Pacers. Do you want to move on and let's talk about some the Pacers, Chris? Is that cool?
Yep.
Okay. So despite ranking 10th in net rating this season and ranking in the top 10 in offense and defense over their past 10 games, earlier this week, The Athletic reported that the Pacers were finally preparing a rebuild, a full-on teardown, trading Miles Turner, trading Domas Sabonis, trading Caris LeVert. Malcolm Brogdon cannot be traded because he just signed an extension. They would probably look to trade him, too, if it was allowed. I have a few thoughts on this and a few questions for you. I think you've been a proponent of them kind of switching gears for a minute now. And so my first thing I want to like pose to you is just, why do you think this took so long? Like, why now are they doing this?
Look at the team's history. I think it's basically them and the Spurs. And before that, to some extent, the Jazz. They've just never, ever, ever been willing to tear it down. I mean, they have not had, to my knowledge, a top 10 pick. You have to go back to like the, don't you have to go back to like the 80s to find the last time they picked in the top 10?
Or maybe yeah, Paul like George the, was what, 11th overall, I want to say? He was not top 10. He was not a top 10 pick.
So they certainly haven't had anything that was like top 5, because for a while, the Knicks had actually been one of the teams that went the longest without having a top 5 pick. You had to go all the way back to like Ewing and like Kenny Skywalker to find the last time they'd done that. So there's a couple teams, but the Pacers are like at the top of that list. And I think that even in some of those reports that you've seen from The Athletic and otherwise, it's pretty clearly stated that their ownership, even as ownership has changed hands at times, they've never, ever, ever expressed an interest in tanking. So they just haven't and they won't. And, you know, are there reasons for that? Yes. I mean, it's very easy for us to kind of be armchair quarterbacks with it and say, just tear it down. They're already basically dealing with the lowest attendance in the league with a team that has decent players on it, but is not winning at a high enough clip to really engage people, intrigue people. So if you tear this down further, what do you think you're looking at attendance-wise for a small market? So there is a risk involved with it. I don't want to say that there's not. That's why they haven't torn it down, is that they want to be competitive. I think it's a market where people tend to fall in love with the players, where, you know, the mom pop sort of fans just really, really love the players because you can get close to them. They're part of the community. Okay, all that said, it's been abundantly clear for a while that they needed to blow this thing up. It is interesting now that now if they had been playing this way to, you know, for the last couple of years, I think that you maybe would be more patient about doing it. Because there are a lot of suggestions and indications that if you just keep this team together as is, that they'll probably be in the play-in or in the playoffs. I mean, like you said, their net rating is really, really good relative to a team that, like, you normally are not talking about blowing a team like this up. Their net rating is good. They've been horrible in the clutch. Net rating-wise, I think they're 3-9 in clutch games, which, you know, if you're in enough of those games, I think they have the worst record in the league. Something really awful, like, what is it? I'd have to go back and look, but maybe you can look it up while I'm on here. If you were to go on ESPN's standings page and look at the expanded standings, I'm pretty sure they have the worst record in three-point games by a mile. Is it like 1-12 or something like that? It's like horrible. And it's really, if you want to be honest, they're basically the inverse of the Wizards, where the Wizards have no business having the record they do based on their net rating and based on how good they've been in close games, and the Pacers have no business being as bad as they are. And now you're starting to see that sliding scale of the Pacers playing better and the Wizards really falling off the face of the earth a little bit, to where it's like, are they for sure a playoff team? Because for all that time they spent kind of close to first place, all of a sudden they're sliding. And, you know, so they're regressing to the mean, and the Pacers are starting to progress to the mean. So anyway, it is interesting that that's starting to happen, but there's a lot of talent on this team. There's a lot of missing talent on this team. TJ Warren was the best player in the bubble, arguably, for a while, and has not been able to play since then. So all that stuff you take into account. But because you have a lot of good players and a lot of good talent on this roster, you could also sell them off and get something for them. It's just weird timing with the Rick Carlisle hire, which looks very odd now in light of the fact that you're basically saying we need to bottom out. So that's the weird part. But yes, they should have done it a while ago. Yes, you can theoretically get a lot for the guys on this roster in individual moves. I imagine you'd probably rather do that than trade guys together, because you could get a lot of, you could probably get a lot back for each of these guys, I would think, especially if you could trade Brogdon. But even without being able to trade him, you've also got Caris LeVert, who's a very interesting, intriguing young player. Not that young anymore, but a very intriguing player if he could stay healthy, I think.
So, yes, all of that is very well said. I personally just don't get why you would wait until you're a couple months into Rick Carlisle's hire. Maybe you just wanted to see if this would work with the pieces that you had, but like, what was the ceiling of this roster? Always. And I know that, like you said, they've had some injury related bad luck. TJ Warren, I'm assuming that they thought would be healthier than he is. He just hasn't responded to his surgery. You know, the situation with Caris LeVert when they acquired him in a trade, that also, I don't think they anticipated that happening to them, just looking, you know, top down at kind of their thought process as a front office. But it's also just like Miles Turner and Domas Sabonis are like working right now. Like their defense, Indiana's defense right now, when those two are on the floor, is the best in the NBA. And they have a plus 10 something net rating together. Last year it was minus 2.3, I believe. Their starting five's net rating is plus 21.1. And when you plug Justin Holiday in for Chris Duarte, it's plus 18.8. So when I say, like, why now, I don't think this team is great. I think they're pretty average still, despite all those numbers I just said. It's just so fascinating to me that you would wait this long to, like, cash out on Sabonis, who, I don't know, he probably won't be an all-star this year, but he had all-star cachet the past couple years. He
made it the last 2 years, yeah.
It's just, it's kind of strange to me, just how it's all playing out. I think that they should be trying to move those guys and see what you can get, because as a small market team, despite the attendance concerns, if you want to win big, the way they're going to do it is through the draft. That's just it's just that's what you have to do if you're Indiana. And I think that there's an opportunity to both get bad and pick up draft assets with the pieces that you have, with Caris potentially. I think that he could garner some attention. I think Sabonis is definitely worth valuable draft assets, or you can get talented young players back, and we're going to talk about some potential trades in a second. Miles Turner, I'm personally not high on Miles Turner. What did he call himself in that interview with The Athletic the other day? Like, he's
about
being
how
treated
he's
like
constantly
a rotational
in the
role player. It's like,
yeah, that was an interesting comment for several reasons. It was a very interesting comment.
It was, and it's kind of like, I don't think that Miles Turner will ever make an all-star team. He apparently, I guess, sees himself as something on that level, potentially, or deserving of
a higher
usage. But
think about it, though. Think about it, because I think the interesting thing, and I think this is true of everything with Indiana, we're like the most ideal version of all this stuff. Caris LeVert and that trade, and what you hoped for out of that trade. TJ Warren before the injury. The hire that they had last year. What was dude's name? I can't even remember anymore, that they fired after one season. You know, getting somebody off Nick Nurse's staff, like after the run that Nick Nurse has had in Toronto, just someone that thinks differently, operates a little bit differently. They all, in theory, make sense. Like a two-big lineup with you know, one that guy that the offense runs through, another guy can stretch the floor, and having a defensive rim protector. All of it in theory makes sense. It just hasn't always worked well together, or something about it has gone wrong. Okay, the coach is like a taskmaster and the players don't like him. TJ Warren gets hurt. Caris LeVert essentially, you know, they catch like an early form of, were they calling it cancer officially? I mean, it's like crazy stuff that they've had. And like you said, this year, some of that stuff has actually worked out. Miles Turner has been really great. And if you're thinking about what Miles Turner's people say to him, I guarantee you they say this because players are already overwhelmingly confident, and then they have people in their ear that make them more confident. If you're Miles Turner, I guarantee you people have been in his ear saying, man, as soon as they trade Sabonis or as soon as you get traded somewhere else and you don't have to worry about playing next to this dude and playing off this dude and this dude having the ball, you're going to be a superstar. Like, I guarantee you they've been telling him that. And so he speaks with the confidence of someone that's been told that. And I guarantee you someone has told him that. And I guarantee you that when all these teams all of a sudden are interested in trading for him, that it probably boosts that part of his thinking even more. So I get what you're saying. He's not going to be an all-star. Doesn't matter what team he goes to. Like, a rotational role player is a little bit strong to say that. But he, I mean, he's way closer to that than he is to being like the star of a franchise. Like, it's abundantly clear. And I've said this, I wrote this about him. He's a fascinating player. It's not to diminish him as a player at all. I think he's like a fringe defensive player of the year candidate. He normally leads the league in blocks or is very close to it. But he's had, and I wrote this story last year before I got to SI, he has had essentially the most static box score in line in the league. Like, every year you can mark him down for almost exactly 13 points a game, 7 boards, 3 blocks, an assist and a half. His shooting percentages are normally static. I will give him credit that this year he's been fantastic shooting the 3. So he's like up at 40% or slightly above, slightly below 40% this year. That is a career high for him. That's great, and it's improvement for him. We'll see if it stays that way. But it's crazy because, I mean, the guy has a 40-point game, and then, you know, as wonderful as that is and as impressive as that is, he still ends up at the same 13 points per game no matter what. I don't care how many points this guy scores the game before. It's always going to be the same averages. So you kind of know what you're getting with him, and I think that that is with Sabonis in the lineup. It's when Turner is out there by himself, you know. And defensively, you know what you're getting, but offensively, it's just kind of the same thing all the time. You know what you're getting with that too. So the trade value is what it is. I think he could get back a lot for you, I think. But I don't think you're going to win a title because of him with this roster, with him, with Sabonis. If Sabonis were somewhere else, it would not make the Pacers markedly better, I don't think. You know, so pivoting to the future for them is a good step. And it could be a quick rebuild to some extent, depending on who you get back for these guys, and if you do well with the draft picks that you're going to get in return, because these are really talented players that you could get something for.
So I gave you first of all, the Nate Bjorkgren erasure is.
Does he have a job somewhere?
I don't think so.
Am I the one erasing him or no?
Am I the one erasing him,
or is the league erasing him?
I think, is he back in Toronto, I want to say?
I don't know.
I think so. I believe he is back in Toronto, the Iowa native, back with Nick Nurse.
Oh, damn. I had a really good zinger, too, had you not gone off factual on me. I'm not, don't say I erased him, the league erased him. But I guess he was erased, and then they penciled him back in Toronto, so yeah.
Yeah, so I guess shout out to him. Anyway, so I gave you a homework assignment, Chris. Everyone loves fake trades, and I know that you personally take pride in your ability to come up with the most interesting ones I've ever come across. So this is just right up your alley.
Bro, obviously. I'm short circuiting you now because you're hyping it up sarcastically, and I did not fully do my homework because I literally started to pencil in trades, and they take me, like, I did our power rankings this past weekend, and mm-hmm. I was messaging our editors the whole time, like, dog, this is agonizing. I cannot finish this because I sit and put so much thought into it. I took at least 9 or 10 hours doing our power rankings this week. And writing them up, at least 9 or 10.
I read them. They were good. So if I hope that makes you feel better and makes you it gives you that.
Well, thank you. But I spend too much time on them and then still don't even feel good about them when they're done. And I'm even and my thing is I'm worse with fake trades because I have no like I don't know how you become a good armchair GM with regards to what you would trade. I've never had any practice. I know how to make the trade machine work, but I refused to sit down and try to go player by player here. So all, the best you're going to get out of me here because I hate them, one, and two, I'm not good at them. Is I picked which teams I thought would be most interesting if you made a trade to those okay. teams with this player. So I did not trade actual players or picks or anything for them because I'm horrible at that. But I do have teams that I think are super intriguing if you trade them to those teams.
Okay, I want you to give me a couple of those teams. But first, I have a kind of like a big picture question about Sabonis. I want to start with Sabonis because okay. I think that he's the one who interests me. I honestly, like, you know, I'll see like a tweet almost every, like, definitely every, well, like, at least once a week, but I want to say more than that, every couple days from, like, a Knicks fan on my timeline being like, the Knicks really need Miles Turner. And it's just like, I just don't understand the fascination with Miles Turner.
You know what the fascination is? Go back and look at what Miles Turner has done to the Knicks this year. That's all it
okay,
is.
Okay, that's fair.
No, I'm dead serious. That 40-point game I was referencing was Miles Turner against the Knicks. He had another game that was something like that, like 25 or 30, but hit like six threes. And so it turns into one of those things. We always make the joke about Doc Rivers and how Doc always signs the players that kill him. Yes. And how Tom Thibodeau always signs the players that have killed for him, you know, with Rose and Taj and, you know, and Luol Deng in Minnesota. I think that a lot of Knicks fans operate that way too, where we always get on coaches that talk up people that have really been dominant against them once or twice. That's what this is. That's what it is. I mean, like, I think Miles Turner is fine, but Knicks fans think that he's like a world beater, and I think it's because he is when he plays against them.
Okay, that's fascinating, and thank you for kind of clarifying why I thought I was like going crazy, honestly, when I see these tweets from Knicks people.
They're way more gung-ho about him than everybody else. Yeah.
Yes, and I guess they have reason to be. They should watch other Pacers games. So let's talk about Sabonis, who is far more fascinating, in my opinion, a better player. Maybe not a easier fit everywhere, but where he goes, if he's traded, I think he should definitely be traded, hopefully. I think it's just a spicier conversation to have. And my big picture question about him is, like, when you look at Sabonis, like, what is his, like, I have a belief that every player has kind of like a destiny in the NBA, and, well, maybe not every player, but for Sabonis, I can't figure out if he is destined to be or should be kind of like a floor-raising presence somewhere, like a Ricky Rubio type, like a better version of that as a big man. Or is he like a final touch on, you know, in this season where there's so many different teams that feel like they can win the championship? Is he the missing piece that if he lands in Brooklyn or if he lands in Golden State or if he lands, you know, pick a team, he's going to be the one who puts them over the top? Like, is he destined to be Cade Cunningham's co-pilot, like the guy who gets traded to a bad team and then lifts them to like respectability, if not this season, the next season?
Yo, you went from legit, I mean, which was the point of what you're saying, you went from like being part of a dynasty potentially to like Cade Cunningham's sidekick.
I know. I've never
heard
a
Swifter. Oh my God. I don't know why that was so funny to me. Anyway, let me let you finish your question completely. Or was that the end of your question?
No, I mean, that was basically it. But, like, do you kind of get where I'm saying?
I totally get what you're saying. And, I mean, I think it's kind of like the dichotomy of who is the lowest level star that could oscillate between being a guy that swings a championship but also a guy that fundamentally doesn't make much difference for the team that he's going to. Which I imagine that's kind of what you were saying with the Pistons example.
Right.
And you have different levels of guys like that. And sometimes you have teams that bet on guys like that where it just doesn't. I think a few years ago, a guy that we had that was not quite on that level but was interesting for different reasons was like, remember when Evan Turner, people thought Evan Turner was the difference between a championship and not? Actually, as we talk about the Pacers and Andrew Bynum and guys like that, the Pacers had a really rough run with some of that.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think Sabonis is more legit than that, and you know, has been relatively healthy since he's been in the league, so it's not a problem. It's just, you know, I'm not someone that likes the trade machine as much as you do, but when you, the last time we really sat and talked about this with the Warriors, I really do think that's a fascinating one, because I think the team is already really good as is, if not great, potentially great, and that's without even Clay being back in the mix and without Wiseman and different things like that. Sabonis gives them more flexibility and versatility offensively, certainly, but I also think that if there are teams that can kind of absorb him defensively to some extent. I think when we talked about it, someone tweeted at us, they're like, I don't want another David Lee on the team, blah, 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 blah. And it's interesting because it's like, okay, even if you reduce him to that, which David Lee was a good player, by the way, he was not a great fit with every lineup they're going to throw out there, but like having David Lee at your disposal and having to put him on the bench, like, Sabonis doesn't strike me as the sort of person where, like, if you put him on the bench or he's not in every game-ending lineup that you play, you know, if there's a team that he does not fit as well against, he doesn't strike me as someone who's such, like, an egotistical person that's going to, like, derail what you're doing. Okay, so you have lineups that you don't play him in. Or you have teams where, like, maybe you reduce him a little bit more than you would against others. If you have a team that you're playing against, like the Suns, for instance, were interesting, look at how Ayton just attacked them on offense, on the offensive boards in that first game they played against them. You know, maybe Sabonis is helpful in a matchup like that, where maybe you want someone that is a little bit bigger, that has a little bit of a bigger body, where you're not just getting abused from that standpoint. So I like having him there, and I think there's a lot of teams where you're just going to overwhelm them with offensive talent alone if he's out there. All the stuff that Draymond does in the short role, Sabonis can do a lot of that. Maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. And he's a really more legitimate...
Really good passer.
He, you know, a lot of times is going to be at least a better shooter than Draymond, even if he's not a knockdown shooter. Can score it. You know, you feel better about him going to the basket than you do with Draymond, although Draymond's been better at finishing this year. So it does not make Golden State worse, even if you're of the mindset that, you know, maybe he's not a perfect fit in every conceivable way. It does not make them worse, and I think it makes them more dangerous, and it gives them more depth too, from that standpoint. I guess you'd be trading something away to get him, but I would be all for that if I'm Golden State. Some people will say that hold out for an even better piece than him, and I'm not sure what all you can get. You know, maybe there is a conversation to be had about that, but he absolutely, I think, potentially puts them over the top, you know, as a team where you look at a team that looks pretty neck and neck with Phoenix right now. I think that that gives them an advantage. And so it takes away one of Phoenix's advantages over them from a rebounding standpoint. If you go smaller than that and you say, man, just trade him to the Orlando Magic, trade him to the you know, the Pistons. By the way, shout out to Orlando, because I look at that team and I get really excited about what they could potentially in the future. So I don't want to come off as a complete knock. I don't know. I could definitely see Sabonis as someone that just kind of lingers and is just there and is just a guy, you know, who puts up his numbers. But, you know, it's like a diet version of like a Kevin Love, where he puts up big numbers, but nobody particularly respects it on its own, because it's just he's languishing away in some market where it's not going to matter, where the team isn't going to be good for several years, you know, and to some extent, he doesn't raise the floor enough to where that becomes like a destination or a team that is making perennial playoff runs that are deep into the second, third round. I don't know if that happens in Detroit. I also don't know how long that process takes to get off the ground in Detroit. So that's why it is interesting and intriguing, because he could literally swing a title, or he could go somewhere where they're like, this is a nice shiny piece to kind of build around. But you know, the Pacers essentially were hoping he was a nice shiny piece to build around, and they ain't built nothing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, but there's a wide range of outcomes with him, potentially in a way where I think nobody views Miles Turner as a star. So I do think there's some people that will at least view Sabonis as one and peg him that way and spin it that way, even if he is kind of like the lowest level star that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he will be the most talented player who gets moved before the trade deadline. I don't see Damian Lillard. I don't see Bradley Beal. I don't see a player of that caliber getting moved. With Sabonis, there's a lot of teams out there that are kind of middle of the pack, and I just don't think that he moves the needle. Like, I don't think he moves the needle for a team like Toronto. I don't think he moves the needle for a team like Boston. even a team like Portland, knowing that you have to give up something of value to get him, and
right, if you could just add him to Portland,
right, then sure. I honestly don't even know how much he moves the needle there, though. Like, if we're talking about like being the missing piece to become a contender, that's kind of what I mean when I say move the needle for those for those particular teams. But I do think it is fascinating to consider what it would take to add him to Golden State. And I've already thrown out the, I think it was James Wiseman, Moses Moody, and Kevon Looney package to get Sabonis. And I think that's just like a great trade. I have another one for you, though, that I have not said publicly that came to my head as I was preparing for this podcast. So I'm going to give you this fake one, and then I want you to throw some teams at me that you think would be really good destinations if you have any others. How's that sound?
Yeah, let's do it.
Super. So the team that I think should maybe not super aggressively go after Sabonis, but it would be really interesting if they did, is the Phoenix Suns. And the package that they could throw together is Jay Crowder, Dario Saric, who obviously has a torn ACL and has another year on his contract that is not super pricey, and Cam Johnson, plus maybe an unprotected first-round pick. They're forfeiting their 2022 pick, but a future first-round pick that's unprotected, which could have a lot of value given Chris Paul's age and where that franchise is going, DeAndre Ayton's contract situation, etc. Like, if Sabonis was in the starting lineup for Crowder, is that, like, what do you think about that? Does that, do you like that fit? Do you like that flexibility that you can have just as a rotation where you play, you know, Sabonis with, as the backup five for minutes? Do you think that screws up their spacing? It screws up their deep? Just what do you think about that? Am I completely off base with trying to put Sabonis with the Suns?
I don't hate it. I don't hate it because here's why. One, Crowder misses a lot of threes, man. Like, I don't know if maybe I haven't looked at his percentage since last week, but when I looked at it last week, I was like, how does anyone, like, a lot of threes that man misses. I think he takes more than anybody outside of Booker, but he's like, he was in the low 30s last time I looked in, like, career wise. He's one of the guys that maybe has one of the best reputations as a shooter that's just not. He shot league average maybe once from three. And obviously he had some toughness and some perimeter defense and stuff like that. So it's not to say that's all he is. He's not just his three-point shot, but his three-point shot is vastly overrated, I think, especially for the volume that he takes. So you're not losing three-point marksmanship by shipping him out. Cam Johnson would sting. He's a really good player. He's a really good young player. Where I find it interesting, again, I was just saying how Phoenix has what seems like a rebounding advantage over the Warriors to some extent. Man, they really have that if you get Sabonis. And what else I like about it too, they haven't struggled with this yet, but I wonder to some extent. I was a big, big proponent of Phoenix adding JaVale McGee because it was very clear last year they got killed with Kaminsky in those minutes when Saric went down in the finals. Mm-hmm. McGee's been solid for them this year. Kaminsky, before he got hurt, was actually solid for them this year. But I like the idea of having a rotation. Like, McGee is the kind of center that I don't think you want to play against every sort of lineup. Right. You know, defensively, even as good as he is and as much of a rim protector as he is, I like having the versatility that if you have to go up and down a little bit more, that's a bonus. I like that more than having someone that is kind of more of a traditional five, and someone that can kind of – that you could potentially run your offense through a lot more than you can't really do that with JaVale. So I like that aspect of it too. Like I said, I don't hate it. I'd probably have to sit and think on a little bit more. It's an intriguing team, though, to send him to. It would be an intriguing team to send him to, and it would – I feel like it would at least make the Warriors think a little bit as far as, like, how do we even go about trying to defend this or stop this?
So yes or no, would it make them the favorites to win the championship?
To me? I'd have to think about it. I don't know right away if it does, but also, again, I don't think I know the answer as to who my favorite even is until I see the Warriors with Klay. I kind of keep coming back to that.
Okay.
But I kind of feel like that's the big difference there, is that they have their own trade that's going to come back, and they're not having to give anything up to get them. So I don't know. But it certainly makes them more interesting than the Warriors, in my opinion, and it makes them more interesting than everybody else that's on that contending line at that point. Because that was my thing, and I think a little bit of why Phoenix flew under the radar. I saw people complaining when I did a podcast with Zach Lowe, and I think you and I've talked about it a little bit too, where Zach just straight up asked me, who are your favorites and why? And I think I picked Utah to go to the finals, and Zach talked about the Warriors and different teams, and we did not even mention the Suns on the podcast as like potential favorites to come out of the West. And Suns fans were just flooding both of our mentions, like, how's no one mentioning the Suns?
Shocking.
They just made it to the finals. They were two games shy of winning it. They didn't win. Yeah, I know, every fan base, man, when you don't mention them. But they were, in fairness to them, they were two games shy of winning, you know, two wins shy of winning the title. Their roster didn't fundamentally change. They got back most of the guys that were, you know, they feared losing, like Cameron Payne and, you know, and different guys. They got them all back on considerable money, you know. Mikal Bridges signed an extension for a great deal. Obviously, the Ayton thing, you know, is kind of lingering, but Chris Paul has looked fantastic. And, you know, they're right. Like, they were not mentioned, but I think they weren't mentioned because they were so static and they brought back everybody. It was just we knew what this team was, essentially. And people had questions about, I didn't, but people had questions about whether or not they benefited from all the injuries last year in the playoffs that happened. They were legit all along. They've looked even better than I would have expected, you know, my wildest expectations for them. That move makes them interesting in a way that, you know, I don't think a lot of other teams will look, given that they probably will just sit tight with the records that they have. It would be very easy to sit tight with a 21-4 record. So if the Suns shake things up by doing that, it's a gamble, but I like it. I don't know if it makes them the favorite, though. I'm not sure.
I think it would make them the favorite. I don't necessarily think that I would, you know, bet a ton of money on them actually winning it. I do think that because of Sabonis's contract, that's a little bit of insurance in case you can't come to an agreement with Ayton. Not the greatest type of insurance, but something that passes as insurance.
I like him being next to Ayton, but not to potentially replace him.
Very
it is
fair.
Interesting, though.
Whew, yeah, that's
I would not
fair.
Like that. That team changes a whole lot if Ayton's not there and he replaces him.
Right. And then knowing their ownership and just how historically frugal their ownership has been, not having to pay Cam Johnson is like a bullet. I feel like they would be happy to dodge. I'm not going to lie. So that's just what my calculus was when trying to put this together. Chris, I know I said that I was going to throw it to you for some Sabonis teams, but I lied because I want to get to some emails. Is that okay? Are your feelings crushed?
No, my feelings are hurt. I'm throwing out one team. I'll do it quickly.
Okay.
Give my justification quickly. You're not just going to bypass me, sir. The one team I'll throw out there, and I've seen other people say this. I think Sam Vecenie said it, and it made me think about more. I think Sabonis to the Wizards would be interesting. Just because, you know, their team, they've been a really nice team so far. They've got some depth, but it's very clear, and I think it's been somewhat clear for a while. Again, their net rating is not in line with what their record is, so they've kind of, you know, punched above their pay grade, really, you know, above their weight. There's some numbers that probably aren't going to stick for much longer if they don't do something. So Sabonis gives them another offensive option. It gives them someone that the ball doesn't have to be in Beal's hand to make something happen. When the ball's in Dinwiddie's hands, a lot of times it's not leaving his hands. You know, he's just kind of done a lot of stuff on his own, which hasn't really looked great so far lately. And I think, quite frankly, they've shown that they have a defense that has shown to be able to protect the rim without really having anybody that you consider to be like an elite rim protector. They have a strategy, I think. And I kind of just like the idea that if you plug him into that, that it potentially works. It gives them a little bit more to play with. And, you know, it's a team that I think is intriguing if you add him there without maybe, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they had to give up. I'm sure fans would be appalled if they had to give up Rui.
Here's the quick fake trade that I came up with looking at the roster that works out. sure. salary wise. Kuzma and Denny Avdia.
Yeah, it was gonna either have to be here or Rui, and I you know, it's I don't know which one people would prefer. I know Rui hasn't played this year, so it'd be more of a future thing for the Pacers, which they would probably be thrilled with from that standpoint because it allows them to tank even more this year. Yeah, I'm sure some fans would not like that. I think you can live with giving up Kuzma. Certainly can live with that. It'd be more about whether you want to give up on your younger prospects. I don't know. I think you do that if you're the Wizards, honestly. I do it. I don't know if they do, but I see a lot of upside there for them because it's very clear they need some sort of infusion if they're going to make a real run. I don't know. Like, you've got Beal there. He's been more vocal about the fact now that, yeah, I don't want to just commit entirely right away because you do that and then you go back on and then you look like an idiot or whatever he said. I can't remember what it was exactly, but this would be a way to do that. I don't know how much Sabonis moves the needle in the mind of NBA stars, but it at least shows that you're trying to do something beyond what you just did already, which was a very nice start to the season, but now seems to be falling flat a little bit.
I would do it in a heartbeat if I was Washington. If I was Indiana, I think I can get a little bit more for Sabonis, and I would ask probably for a first, and you know, that could be where the talks fall apart. Okay, so let's move on to emails really quick. I want to squeeze two in at the end here. Okay. So my long-winded friend, you're going to have to be brief.
Short.
In your
I'm
responses.
Be brief. Brevity.
Okay. Our first one comes in from Jackson, who writes, I think your podcast and discussions are great. I am actually a fairly new listener, but I have a question about teams and the general ratings about them. If you put James Harden and Kevin Durant on practically any team together, the whole NBA would cower. For some reason with them on the Nets, the general conversation puts them as not good enough without Irving. This just confuses me because most other teams have two stars where at least one is arguably not as good as either Durant or Harden. What is with this narrative? Is it the lack of role players? I see the evidence that the Nets struggle, but it strikes me as odd. And thank you, Jackson. Jackson's email was actually a lot longer than that, and he had some other ones that maybe we'll couch and save for another show. But I really liked this question. Chris, before I throw it to you, I'll just say, like, Joe Harris's ankle injury is just a killer for this team when you watch them play. Like, they have nobody who can space the floor besides Patty Mills. And, like, Cam Thomas is their sixth or seventh man. Bruce Brown really can't play as much as you would like him to play if you were a Brooklyn Nets fan because DeAndre Bembry is getting those minutes and neither one can really shoot or space. So they can't really play together. And there's no balance here. And when Steve Nash is trying to get spacers on the floor, they're really hurt and compromised on the defensive end, and vice versa when he's trying to stack up the defense. And so, yeah, like I think it's a role player problem combined with Harden. You know, there's a lot of reasons why Harden's been relatively struggling. But I just think they don't have spacers. And like, if you watch the shots that Kevin Durant hits, they're like all impossible. Like, nothing is easy for Kevin Durant this season. He's just making it look easy because he's the best player on the planet. But they don't have, there's no one with gravity. And I just think that when you take away Irving, who's one of the best shooters alive, and you take away Joe Harris, who's one of the best shooters alive, you're in trouble. And that's what we're seeing with them. But what do you agree with? First of all, do you agree with what Jackson's kind of proposing here?
No, I think it goes back. First of all, I'm more in agreement with you. I think it's a good question. I think it's simplistic from the standpoint, though, that like if you put these two stars on any other team has depth, and they have. Sure. And I know we talked at the beginning. So not to be hypocritical, because you and I talked at the beginning of the season, before the season, about how they added depth, and they had. You know, obviously Patty Mills has been great for them and is a player that any team would love to have. But That's when you're factoring in that you have Joe Harris. It's when you're factoring in that Blake Griffin isn't going to age the way that I thought he was aging last year.
Out of the rotation.
Some of these pieces don't part. Out of the rotation, Nick Claxton has, you know, these are guys that are funneling back and forth between the G League. When you have those sorts of problems, any other team would have more than two or three other playable guys that you know you can play every night. And then it's just haven't had that. So that's the reason that, yeah, if you plug those two guys on other teams, most teams, they would have more shooting than the Nets have right now. This was always going to be the problem with the Nets if one of those three went down, is that you've banked so much on those three that there's not really enough to spread around. And that's why it was such a coup for them to get someone like Patty Mills, because they don't have a lot of guys that are just that good outside of it, particularly when Blake is not there and when other guys are just not usable because Joe Harris makes everybody workable. So it's no, it's not odd. It's just that this is the risk you run when you go all in on three guys and one of them is not able to play. And one of them does not look the superstar that he normally looks. You know, this would be the case with any team.
No, that's exactly right. They don't have a lot of depth. Their third best player is LaMarcus Aldridge. That's not
who wasn't even supposed to play this year. They like crazy.
No, no,
we thought it was done.
There could be a, you know, I hope this doesn't happen, but I don't know what's stopping what happened last year from happening ever again for him. You can't totally rule that out, right? So, just a it's
held together by tape.
Yes, and they're in first place, I believe, still. So it's weird to talk about this team. But they just have been very disappointing in my view, and it's going to be very fascinating to see what moves they make, if any, before the trade deadline, and you know whether or not they try to trade Kyrie. It's just going to be very interesting for the rest of the year. Related to that question comes an email from Gavin, who writes, "A constant debate I have with my friends slash coworkers is about Kyrie. I often argue that if I were a GM, I'd rather have Trae Young. Do you agree? Thank you guys for being my most consistent insiders. Keep up the good work." Thank you, Gavin, for that email.
Shout out to Gavin.
So, you know, for this question, I think it's really dumb if we don't pretend Kyrie is not a conspiracy theorist and able to play basketball. So for the purpose of the exercise, we're going to say that Kyrie Irving is an active member of the NBA and competing on a nightly basis. And last we saw him on the floor when he was healthy, he was tremendous. Like he's dazzling and scintillating and one of the most enjoyable players to watch. So we'll keep that. We'll keep it with that perspective, Chris. We will factor in age though. Kyrie is 29. Trae is 23. Just in your view, just who is better and who would you rather have on your team if you were a general manager?
Just straight up who's better, it's Kyrie. I mean, I don't think it's hard to...
I would not say that, but go ahead. I want to hear.
Straight up, I think it's still Kyrie. There's just not much Trae can do defensively. You know, I'll give Trae the edge as a passer. There's no question about that. The efficiency is not close. Now, granted, that's skewed a little bit by Kyrie having an all-time great efficiency season playing next to Durant. He didn't play that much next to Harden. Him and or the three of them did not play much together is probably the most accurate way to put it. So he had a 50-40-90 year. But, you know, if you take him and put him on a team, that's more reminiscent of what Trae Young had prior to last year, it would be really interesting, because if you want to be honest, Kyrie and Trae actually probably were not that far off as far as like what we were watching and what our perception of them was. Both really fun to watch, both really flashy. Kyrie before LeBron got to Cleveland and Trae before last year. Really fun to watch, but you weren't going to win with them because they weren't superstars to that level, or they were not perceived to be superstars to that level. So I don't know, like if you just put them on really bare teams, barren teams, I don't know who would be better, if it would be close, but I would take Kyrie. I just think that he's a lot more efficient on his own, I think, than Trae Young. Trae Young gets to the line to make up for a lot of that, but just as far as the shooting ability and different stuff like that, I think it's Kyrie. Defensively, I think it's Kyrie. As a passer, I think it's Trae. So I would give the edge to Kyrie, but I'm not trusting Kyrie enough to build around him, knowing what we know about him. It's Trae, and Trae is younger, so it's Trae. So I think it's a good question, but I think Kyrie has a little bit more ability But I would go with Trey just because I don't trust Kyrie at this point, and I don't think anybody else should.
I would go with Trey as well. I think Trey is a superior player. And I think it's really interesting because I don't think that either would benefit from switching roles, like switching teams. Like Trey Young on the Nets with Harden and Durant, I think is
not
just
helpful.
It's just not working, right?
Yeah.
And Kyrie on the Hawks, where he's got to do everything offensively. He's got to generate all the offense. He's got to run a million pick and rolls. He's got to throw the lobs to Collins and Capella and the kickouts to Herter and Bogdanovich. And, oh, by the way, you know, score 25, 26 a night yourself. I don't think that he can do that. So it's a fascinating question because on the surface, they're very similar. They're similar in size. They're similar in, you know, positional status or whatever. But I think there's a big difference and a gap between how they play and how they kind of interact with teammates, if that makes
For sure.
any sense whatsoever.
Absolutely, it does.
And I wanted to ask this question selfishly because I wrote about Trae Young on the site today. So everyone go check that out at SI.com. And basically, I wrote about how before the season began, Trey said at Media Day that he wanted to, quote, perfect the mid-range. And this season, he's been one of the best mid-range shooters. It's not the greatest volume. It's 4 shots per game from the mid-range, which is double what he did last year. But it's very comparable to someone like Chris Paul in accuracy. And you just watch the film and if he's able to be Chris Paul-esque in the mid-range, it just adds a completely different dimension to who he is as a player and makes him that much more devastating. He's also hitting pull-up threes at a very impressive rate for the first time in his career. I know everyone thinks that he's this a tremendous outside shooter, and that just hasn't been the case throughout his career. But this season, he's shooting nearly 40% on pull-up threes and taking over 7 a game. So that's literally what Steph Curry is doing.
Exactly.
Yes, we'll see if that is sustainable. So it's just a fascinating question. And Gavin, thank you again for emailing us. Is there anything else you have to say, Chris, about this debate before we can kind of hang up for the day?
No. I think it's just for me, the one thing I would give Kyrie that I didn't hear you mention much is just that neither one of them is like a guy you would build around defensively. Let's say that. Let's be polite.
Correct.
You know, or we could do the MTV thing and get real. I mean, these are not guys you really want to have defensively. I mean, and I think if you had to pick one or the other, Kyrie holds up better. And I think we've seen what he could do at full effort. I think we're still waiting to see Trae Young kind of play with just full balls to the wall effort defensively. He has to do so much offensively that I get that it's difficult for him, but there are times where the effort just really isn't there. So I would still take Kyrie from that standpoint. But Trey, again, if we're talking about intangibles, I mean, there's no debate to be had in a year where Kyrie's not out there with a team that could win a championship if he was. And maybe can win a championship if he's not, but certainly can win it if he is. So Trey has certainly been there, you know, and not to mention the other stuff that has kind of come up with Kyrie over the years and the wishy-washiness. So I would take Trey and not really think about it twice from that standpoint. But ability-wise, I think it's a really interesting debate.
Yep. So I think that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much to you, Chris, for your insight and your brevity on those two last emails.
I'll try to get better with that in the future.
And thank you so much to our listeners. Everyone, please keep the emails coming. They've been so tremendous over the past few days and weeks. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone, please stay safe and please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Are you ready to get serious about your weight loss journey? Tried crash and burn calorie restriction? Considering the invasive strategy of GLP-1 injections like Ozempic? Slow down and consider a safer, easier, and long-lasting solution. Golo is clinically proven to work without the dangerous side effects of injections and fad diets. Golo's release helps your body combat the stress of dieting while controlling cravings and hunger. Minimize muscle loss and feel better with Golo. Just take one Golo Release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. It's an effective and affordable plan to lose weight for good. There are no insurance hoops to jump through. No prescription needed, just sensible, effective weight loss and a healthier lifestyle on your terms. Get started on a healthier, happier, and more energetic you at Golo.com. 5 million people have already discovered a better way to lose weight. Join them and go to Golo.com. That's GOLO.com today.